From the Mutual Newsroom in Chicago, here is up-to-the-minute news and comments by the outspoken Midwestern editor and reporter, Robert F. Hurley. Mr. Hurley will be with you in just a moment, but first, a message of interest to all of us. More teachers, more buildings, more textbooks and supplies are needed for the enormously enlarged school population following upon the sharp rise in America's birth rate during and since the war. This means that citizens throughout the United States should join and work with their local civic groups and school boards, actively seeking improved educational conditions. And young people in high school and college should give serious consideration to making teaching their profession. For information about how citizens can take action to improve their schools, write to the National Citizens Commission for the Public Schools, 2 West 45th Street, New York 19, New York. Now, here is Robert F. Hurley.
Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. We're all back on standard time. And again, this reporter is back on the coast-to-coast network of the Mutual Broadcasting System with the morning file of news. And today, the talk continues to center around the news of Soviet Russia's solving the riddle of the atomic bomb. At the United Nations General Assembly, the subject is expected to be how to regulate use of the bomb. British Foreign Secretary Ernest Bevin takes the rostrum to set forth the views of his country. It's expected that Bevin will reject the plans Russia has advanced for international control of atomic energy. Instead, Mr. Bevin is expected to back up the plan advocated by the United States and approved by an overwhelming majority of the United Nations. This calls for UN supervision without the shackle of a Security Council veto. Now, the pressure for the UN to do something about atom control at this session is, of course, steadily mounting. And in London, the British Labour Cabinet has had an important session, and the ministers decided that the government will make no further statement on Russia's having an A-bomb. But parliamentary sources say that Winston Churchill will press the government tomorrow for a detailed report on the announcement that Russia has the bomb. At Chalk River, Canada, atomic experts from the United States, Britain, and Canada will meet to map out the three nations' future security policies now that Russia has a bomb of its own. The experts will aim at mapping the best ways to keep secret what atomic information the three countries now share and have left. The news of Russian atomic progress is having its effect on the running discussion of our relations with Franco-Spain. Spain has uranium resources. And Republican Senator Robert Taft thinks that Spain should become a partner in North Atlantic defenses. The Ohio Republican wants a speedy return to friendly relations with the Madrid government. Says Senator Taft, Spain is in a key military position so far as Europe is concerned. And the Navy is using its top carrier and aircraft equipment today in maneuvers designed to convince Defense Secretary Lewis Johnson that the Navy can effectively use the atom bomb against water targets. In Washington, congressional leaders say the news of Russia having the bomb will speed the military aid bill through a joint House-Senate committee. The joint committee must weld the House and Senate versions of the bill into a unified measure, and the final draft may be approved by nightfall. London newspapers today are poking some fun at the United States, and particularly at the way the news of the Russian bomb was delivered to the American people. Say the British newspapers, so many American officials took pains to reassure the public that there was no cause for alarm that they gave the impression that they were afraid that the American people would become panic-stricken. And the British papers say the reason that European nations didn't get very excited about the news is that they're accustomed to bombings and the threat of bombings. Also, in the nation's capital today, we have information of the talks in the steel dispute continuing against a background of growing resentment against the industry by the nation's steelworkers. The negotiations are heading toward the showdown stage. Lack of a settlement will throw 500,000 basic steelworkers on the picket line by this Saturday and an equal number in succeeding weeks. The focal point of the negotiations between scores of companies and the union is Pittsburgh. There, Union President Philip Murray is meeting with officials of United States Steel to try and settle the vital issue of a pension plan for the workers. And the decision of United States Steel, the giant of the industry, could set the pace for the other companies. Now, observers fear that growing anti-company sentiment among workers may touch off new wildcat strikes in the industry. However, there is optimism this morning. Federal mediation officials who have been sitting in on the negotiations say they're hopeful of a compromise agreement which will be reached. In other labor management developments today, the CIO Rubber Workers has offered to end its month-long strike at the B.F. Goodrich Company. According to a union official, the men will go back to work if the company will grant a pension and some minor contract agreements. A federal judge in Chicago will hear a petition today to return the Chicago plant of the Tucker Corporation to the government. The trustees of the corporation, appointed by the court, have met with War Assets Administration officials to work out an agreement which would allow the trustees to sell the plant within 60 days or to continue plans to reorganize the corporation. But Preston Tucker, the embattled founder of the motor company, has promised to fight this move. Mr. Tucker personally entered the battle to fight the move made by the court-appointed trustees by issuing the news that the corporation attorneys have been instructed to stop this attempt to turn back the plant to the government. Tucker told the press that immediately following the indictments handed down by the grand jury last June, he asked for an immediate trial, and the trial was set for October 3. I knew then, he said, that time itself was very important, knowing that once and for all we could prove our innocence before a judge and jury and clear up the so-called controversial subjects, the bulk of which were built on false rumors, untruths, and gossip, as the government admitted in their denial to us of the right to examine the SEC report, which incidentally was made available to the Detroit News and One magazine, both of which wrote unfinished facts of a detrimental nature to the corporation and its officials. Tucker says a reorganization of the corporation is more possible today than it ever was, that the corporation is not bankrupt, and that the car has a higher demand today than it ever had, even in the face of the continual opposition it has had to meet and the interference it has been given. Tucker says further that the facts, as they will be revealed in the forthcoming trial, will be most interesting. I'll have more news in less than a minute.
The most devastating polio epidemic in our history has created a situation bordering on crisis. Care for 40,000 polio victims has wiped out the March of Dimes epidemic funds. Those funds must be replaced immediately. $14,500,000 are needed within the next few days to give young polio victims the care necessary to make them well again. We must not permit them to remain crippled for the rest of their lives. We must not abandon them lying limp and paralyzed in hospitals. And calls for help are still being received. Frantic wires are still coming in. There's no time to waste. It is a stupendous undertaking to raise $14,500,000 in a few days. But it must be done, it can be done, and it will be done if you send your dimes and dollars to Polio, care of your local post office immediately. That address is Polio, care of your local post office. Do it now. Your delay may mean disaster.
Well, we have all had the weekend to consider the somewhat surprising news that Soviet Russia has the secret of the atom bomb. As so often happens, the announcement of Moscow's atomic accomplishments set off a chain reaction and a quick explosion of near hysteria, the nail biting by the very nervous, and the worried frowns of the properly concerned will continue. But we should at once understand that this announcement had been expected. American scientists had forecast at the time of the explosion of the American atomic bombs over Japan that Soviet Russia would probably have the secret of the atomic weapon by 1950. And they were not far wrong, were they? We also have the word of these scientists that Moscow is talking through its hat in bragging about having solved the atomic riddle in 1947, and that would be 2 years ago. That is Russian propaganda. For our experts would have known about any atomic explosion 2 years ago, for we have the instruments to record such atomic blasts in any part of the world, particularly the part of the world controlled by Russia. Now, this theory is held by one of the nation's outstanding scientists, Dr. Harold Urey, who had much to do with the development of the atomic bomb in this country. Dr. Urey scoffs at the Moscow claim and says it is a bluff, a date pulled from a hat. But the able Dr. Urey does not scoff at the news of Russia's having solved the riddle in the year 1949, nor does anyone else. The world political situation probably will grow worse in many respects as a result of the announcement of Russia's atom explosion. The Soviet Foreign Office may become truculent, and certainly there will be no desire to knock any chip off the Russian shoulder. And it follows that Moscow will now attempt to solidify her power in those nations within her sphere of influence. International control of atomic energy under the Baruch Plan or any other cooperative program will be even more difficult to achieve in the future than it has proven to be in the past. We need only note that Soviet Russia would not agree to cooperate to cooperate in such a program when Moscow's scientists had not solved the riddle, but were confident of success nonetheless. Now that they have obtained that success, it is wishful thinking indeed to assume that they would enter into any plan which would bring about their atomic laboratories under the constant eye of any international commission. We may just as well accept the known facts this morning that Soviet leaders are ruthless and that Uncle Sam has been poking his nose into affairs all over the world. In many instances, in those areas where there is a conflict between Russian and American interests and where the very act of American interference has been exploited as an anti-Soviet move. It is incredible, but it is true. Washington has become a party to an anti-Russian treaty in being one of the principals in the Atlantic Pact. Just last week, the administration pushed through the Arms to Europe program, which is certainly anti-Soviet in scope, and was given its impetus by congressmen who claimed to be worried about the spread of communism in Europe. But all the while these measures were being pushed through Congress, the very same exponents of aid to Europe through the guise of combating Soviet expansion, the very same exponents of standing up to Moscow abroad, were the staunchest defenders of the pro-Soviets in this country. The Secretary of State, Mr. Dean Acheson, has thrown cold water on any attempt to try to sift the Soviet spies from the good aliens who wish to make the United States their home. And we have seen how the administration has hurried to the defense of those suspected of fifth column activities in the past. Our FBI has had its hands tied on numerous occasions. According to sworn testimony, had its hands tied because high-placed officials in our government have sought to protect suspected communist spies. Within 24 hours after the announcement of the Soviet explosion of an A-bomb, the House Committee Investigating Un-American Activities issued a report saying that a communist ring still operates right in the nation's capital and that the main duties of the present communist ring is to transmit government documents and information passed along by spies within the federal departments of our government. As Senator O'Connor of Maryland and Congressman Veld of Illinois said last night, the lax security controls and the soft attitude toward communism in this country helped the Soviet Union in its rush to have the bomb. These congressmen, one a Senate Democrat and the other a House Republican, protest that communist agents are operating in the United States despite the fact that they are known to official Washington. So goes the world today.
Thank you, Mr. Hurley. The world today is divided by a struggle of ideas. One is a devotion to personal liberty. The other is an adherence to the all-powerful totalitarian state. We are proud of our American heritage of individual freedom. We take it for granted. We point with pride to our freedom of speech and press, our right to assemble and to petition our government, our right to be secure in our persons and property against unlawful searches and seizures, and to the many other rights we enjoy in our democracy. But our freedom must be defended against the totalitarian idea. Freedom demands that each of us carry out to our fullest ability our duties as citizens, to vote in an informed way so that the best man is placed in public office, to serve on juries, to take an active interest in all public issues, and to participate in community, state, and national affairs. These are duties, yes, but they also are privileges found only in a free nation. Remember, freedom is everybody's job. You've been listening to Robert F. Hurley, the outspoken Midwestern editor and reporter, with the latest in up-to-the-minute news and comment. Mr. Hurley is regularly heard every morning, Monday through Friday, at this time over many of these same mutual stations. This program has come to you from Chicago. This is the world's largest network, the Mutual Broadcasting System.